This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 26th of November 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 25th of November 2021, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: Leisure Centre site leased to uni, Dingham's to close, and residents of St Cross say farewell to their postman. So we start with the first story.
Leisure Centre site leased to uni. Council chiefs have agreed to lease the redundant River Park Leisure Centre, RPLC, site, despite calls for a public consultation over its future. Winchester City Council unveiled earlier this month that it had been in talks with the University of Southampton, which runs the Winchester School of Art, to help develop plans for an expanded campus, including the RPLC site. On Tuesday, the Council's Cabinet agreed to lease the site to the University for 5 years. This will now enable it to develop proposals in consultation with local people, bring forward a planning application, and, if successful, a longer-term, 150-year lease would then be awarded. However, the plan has sparked criticism and calls for the council to look at other ideas for the site. Leader campaigner Esme Holding told Cabinet, "The new Winchester Lido group believes that the proposal to dispose of the River Park Leisure Centre site to the University of Southampton are simply wrong. There has been no public consultation and no chance for other potential users of the site to come forward. This is undemocratic and takes no notice of the wishes of the people of the city and the wider district." Former city councillor and Hyde resident Rose Burns said that many residents are alarmed about the proposals. Ms Burns argued that if the council leases the land to any private organisation, such as Southampton University, then it would appear to breach the restrictive covenant on the site, and the statutory trust under which the site is held by the council for the benefit of Winchester residents. The council denied this was the case. Sam Feltham, who has started a petition calling for the council to pause the proposal, told Cabinet, "At present, I can report the feeling amongst fellow residents is that the council has strong-armed their way into making this proposal. Although there may not be a formal requirement to conduct a public consultation, that does not mean they don't have a moral duty to do so." Councillor Charles Radcliffe, council member for St Michael's Ward, raised concerns if in 5 years' time the university is unable to continue with the plans, it would leave the council and, by extension, residents exposed. Cabinet member for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said following the decision, "This is an exciting prospect for Winchester, as it looks to our long-term recovery from the pandemic and will ensure that this much-loved area remains vibrant. Our two organisations are in alignment strategically. Any development will be undertaken sustainably. And as well as the economic benefits that an extended campus would bring, the university are also keen to create a cultural resource for our city, something which we know local people are keen to see." Wendy Appleby, Vice President Operations at the University of Southampton, said, "We have had an extremely positive interaction with Winchester City Council, and the people of Winchester so far are excited to develop our thoughts for the use of this site."
Dingham's to close. A long-standing and independently owned Winchester cookshop is due to close in January as it can no longer afford to pay its rent and business rates. Dingham's cookshop in the square is closing because it cannot make a profit and afford to stay at its current location. The business, which also has a shop in Salisbury, exercised a break clause in the lease of the building, which is owned by Winchester City Council. Part owner of Dingham's, Becca Hardingham, explained that the business had been in talks with the council for a year to try and lower the rent. She said, "Unfortunately, the Winchester shop will close. We have tried to look for smaller premises in the city, but none were appropriate. The staff at the Winchester shop will have the option to move across to Salisbury. Now we will be focusing on the Salisbury shop with its cafe and our online shop." Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Minister, or I beg your pardon, Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "It's a real shame that Dingham's have chosen to exercise the break clause in their lease. We didn't ask them to leave. The council were happy to talk about the rent level at their rent review next year, and central government sets the level of business rates." Councillor Learney added, "I know a lot of similar businesses have really suffered in the face of online competition, particularly when people visit to see what's available and then shop online. Dingham's is a family business which has been in Winchester for almost 30 years. The shop has not confirmed an exact closing date yet, but it is expected to close its Winchester branch in January."
Residents of Road in St Cross say farewell to their postman. Winchester residents recently said goodbye to their popular postman on his final day. Last Wednesday, November the 17th, St Faith's Road residents came together to say a big thank you to Ian Ruddle, who had been their postman for the last 17 years. Ian is moving to Saskatoon in Canada to join his wife Lisa, who is originally from that area. Temperatures there can reach minus 40 degrees. With this in mind, he was presented with a thermos flask by Jamie Brooks on behalf of the neighbours, and many cards of appreciation and further gifts. He will be missed, with many agreeing that he is the finest postman they'd ever had the pleasure of knowing.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements.
For what?
Batstone. Margaret Teresa Batstone, née O'Hare, on the 11th of November. Colville. Dougie Colville, on the 15th of November, aged 101. And he, of course, was a former mayor of Winchester. Gardiner. Margaret Gardiner, on the 18th of November. Gover, Brian Kenneth, known as Roy Gover, in Winchester Hospital on the 12th of November, aged 87. Gray, David, known as Dave or Leslie Gray, in Winchester on the 2nd of November, aged 68. Hanton, Clive John Hanton, on the 27th of October at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 60. Iacobucci Gilda. Gilda Iacobucci, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, on the 9th of November, aged 93. Kerr, Carol Ann Kerr, at Westacre Nursing Home on the 5th of November. Moran, Gloria Moran, on the 16th of November, aged 87. Statham, William Charles, known as Bill Statham, on the 13th of November, aged 92. And Vining, Philip William Thomas Vining, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, on the 18th of November, aged 69. And now we have Christian comment.
Getting closer to the kingdom of God. It was the last Sunday of the year for the church last Sunday. When I was small, our vicar used to reassure us that we hadn't missed Christmas, but we were about to wait in awe for it to come. Last Sunday was the last Sunday of the church's year when we celebrate Christ the King. It is a culmination of our year's cycle of readings, worship, and reflection, which has taken us through the life, death, and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. Like many other churches, I expect, the children donned crowns to remind themselves and all of us of Jesus' kingship. "My kingdom is not of this world," replied Jesus to Pilate on his arrest, John 18:36. What did he mean? He was being taunted by Pilate, who challenged him about being called a king. No, he was not a king in the way we see worldly kingship, but he brought truth, love, and hope for the kingdom which he always has and always will rule over. His rule leads us to God and to the truth. His kingdom is a mystery. It is, and yet it is to come. Sometimes we have a glimpse. We find ourselves on the edge of it through prayer or acts of goodness done to us or we do for others. When we are healed or see healing and hope in others. When we feel deep compassion that seems to come from somewhere we didn't know was in us. That is when we are close to the kingdom of God. Eventually, we will know all about it when we die and go to our next life. Then all will be made clear. Meanwhile, we welcome Advent starting next week. The city may be ahead of us with its lights, market, and other signs of light and hope, already there for us to enjoy. But next Sunday is the first of Advent. So begins the 4 weeks of waiting and reflection for the birth and human life of our God, coming into the world to be like us and with us. It is a wonderful time of year, my favourite time, when the excitement and mystery can still send excited anticipation through me. For all of us, let Advent be a time of transition from the old year to the new. A time when we reflect, find some quiet and contemplative time to ponder on what is about to come. What are we about to celebrate? The birth of a tiny, vulnerable child who became a refugee almost immediately, but who was cared for and protected by his family, even though he was also God. So, there is the cycle, the birth, life, ministry and death of Jesus, King of all there ever has been, is now and will be. Ponder on it for the next 4 weeks, light a candle each week, and watch your understanding grow.
Next we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have quite a variety of letters, and we start off about the Lido and the Leisure Centre.
Yes, this first letter from Annie Saunders is entitled Council Reconsider Lido Decision. Sir, an open-air Lido in the river park would not just be for the wild swimmers, it would be a wonderful asset for everyone in and around Winchester. Whilst travelling through France some years ago with a young family, every town seemed to have a Lido, which was a fun venue for all ages. As soon as the weather turns warm, people seek out water, not some stuffy, noisy indoor swimming pool, with respect to the new pool at Bar End, which is, of course, a superb facility. I was fortunate enough to be able to take my children to the old outdoor pool at St Swithin's, and we had happy times. The children could play with their friends and the grown-ups could chat while keeping an eye on their little darlings. Safe, healthy fun. These days I take my grandson to the Lido in Lewes, East Sussex, which is a well-loved community amenity. And what we are offered instead, and what are we offered, rather, instead by this council? Nothing, actually. An extension to Southampton University. So on behalf of everybody, I ask the City Council to reconsider and do right by the community. Or is it already too late and they've taken the easy option? So writes Annie Saunders, East Street, Alsford.
And on the same subject, this letter from Romy Halliwell is entitled Lido Benefits. Sir, we have had the opportunity to enjoy the Lidos in two communities, Clifton in Bristol and Brockwell Park, South London. Both sites were in recent years earmarked to be closed down to make way for building development, and in both cases there was opposition which resulted in the pools and poolside cafes being kept open to the huge benefit of swimmers, young and old. Apart from the recognition that open water swimming has health benefits, the story of the successful struggle to reopen Brockwell Lido, entitled The Lido by Libby Page, is on an NHS list of books recommended to lift the spirits. Go for it, Winchester. This from Romy Halliwell, Flexford Road, North Battersley.
And another letter, this one from Keith Webb, entitled Public Swimming. Sir, in all the recent correspondence about open-air swimming in Winchester, I've not seen any reference to the pool that existed before the 1939-45 war in the northeastern corner of the recreation ground, in the river. It was in the same stream, apparently, where your photograph of wild swimming is shown, Chronicle, November the 18th. I had my first swimming lessons there in about 1936, and my father remembered swimming there as a child, and when it was not open, changing outside and swimming under the fence across the river. We also regularly used the Bulldrove pool in Garnier Road before the war, and I well remember the feeling of river water on my skin. It was quite different from the chlorinated water used in the Lido. We frequently saw quite large trout swimming about. Winchester College also had a swimming pool, but in the main stream of the Itchen on the south side of Garnier Road. Further to the discussion about a new outdoor swimming pool, has any thought been given to making use of the existing pool in the now closed recreation centre and turning it into an outside facility? Demolishing the building housing it and creating new outside changing rooms, etc., if the old ones cannot be adapted, would be a much cheaper option than starting again. And this is from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter has a title, Plan Deafness, and it's written by Marianne Tafasoli. Sir, I was pleased to read Joanna Lewis's piece in the Chronicle on November the 4th. She hit the nail on the head with the City Council Planning Committee's total failure to take environmental and local issues into account. We are lucky that we can see Ye Olde Planning Committee, as Joanna called it, online. A quick review of decisions over the last year shows the planning committee has overruled local parish councils or councillors in about 30% of the applications. The chair is very keen on describing the committee decisions as democratic. But how can this be true if the local representatives are consistently overruled? The committee is always quick to excuse itself that superior authority ruling require it to decide in certain ways. But they are elected to get the best out of the regulations for the people who elect them, and not fall over for the developers, big business and their agents. In the same review of the planning meetings, it's alarming that members mention the environment in just a handful of cases. Recently, new buildings have been permitted to be built on green space, a multi-storey car park close to the national park, HGVs granted permission down narrow country lanes and tearing the verges up in the process, and not a single new tree has been planted by Winchester City Council. Last Saturday, many thousands of young people marched in support of measures being discussed in Glasgow, demanding more. Are your representatives totally deaf about what the whole country, let alone the people of Winchester and the area, are saying? That letter is from Marianne Tafasoli, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
And another letter critical from Kim Gottlieb, entitled Cabal Decisions, Sir. 7 years ago, almost to the day, I was honoured to be one of the leaders of the Winchester March, at which close to 2,000 locals rallied against the Guildhall and berated the City Council. The exercise started as a response to the Council's plans for Silver Hill, but it was quickly extended by concerns for other projects. The common cause and rallying cry was, "We want change." Less than 3 months later, in February 2015, the Council was castigated by the High Court for its unlawful breaches of the procurement regulations. The leader of the Council resigned. We then had the Lloyd Jones inquiry, which, a year later, concluded that the cause of the Council's woes were, in effect, due to its management. A few months later, the Chief Executive resigned. Since the march, we've had four different Conservative leaders and a Liberal Democrat administration as from May 2019. If anything has changed, it's only because the Council's conduct has probably got worse. It has carried on acting unlawfully and has conceded its failures in judicial review proceedings, brought on two more of its own developments at Station Approach and the Bar End Car Park. The Council's plans for Central Winchester, aka Silver Hill, are incoherent, and its approach to River Park may well trigger another judicial review. All administrations promise that they will learn the lessons of the past, make the changes needed, and go forward in a transparent and consultative and lawful way. Under the guidance of the current Chief Executive, the current administration has failed on almost every count. Worse still, the basics of democracy have been stifled, if not snuffed out, altogether. No longer are key decisions made by the full body of 45 councillors. Instead, all decisions are made by a cabal within the seven-member cabinet, with the rest of the ruling group risking charges of party disloyalty if they fail to toe the line. The public is informed, sometimes, rather than consulted. Change is sorely needed, but next time, hopefully, it will be a positive one. Perhaps we need another march. This from Kim Gottlieb of East Stratton.
And this is a letter from Philip Morgan, entitled Investment Lack. Sir, Flick Drummond's weak letter last week, Chronicle November 11, fails to address the issues. She says there have been 60 years of underinvestment in water infrastructure. For 40 of those years, from 1979, the Tories have been reducing public spending. It was bad for the economy. Then water was given to private companies to invest. Ms. Drummond says they haven't. Then we didn't invest in the North, in housing, prisons, the NHS, social care, you name it. We've underinvested. If we don't throw huge sums of money at these things now, they will never be tackled. We also need to spend huge amounts on climate change, for example, to finance home insulation and replacing gas boilers. What householder will spend on that without a government grant? It's no good wringing our hands about the awful cost and extra debt whilst we pollute rivers and let climate change happen. On Owen Paterson, everybody knew that he had offended. No MP defends him, and he had an appeal process, only it isn't called an appeal. Yet Ms. Drummond voted to support Paterson. This week, I hope she is free to condemn him, as hopefully this time the PM will not bully backbench MPs to vote the wrong way. It's terrible to see even the voting process in Parliament being corrupted. On Owen Paterson, I have written in similar vein to Steve Brine. I'm appalled to write such awful things to our MPs who work so hard and tirelessly for us and now have threats to their personal safety. And this is from Philip Morgan, Killam Lane, Winchester.
Liz Cooper says, great loss to city. Sir, I am a regular customer of Dingham's Cook Shop in the square, and I have recently heard that this shop is going to close in January. I was shocked by the news, as I am sure many other residents will be, particularly as this excellent cook shop is the only one in the area offering such a range of products and a very knowledgeable and long-serving staff team who are passionate about cooking. I have learnt that the owner has exercised a break clause in the lease, but has apparently been unsuccessful in finding smaller premises in the town. Dingham's is now underway with staff redundancies and closure of the business. This family-owned company will retain the cookshop and fireplace installation outlet in Salisbury. In my view, this will be a great loss to the Winchester retail sector and an example of yet another privately owned business leaving the city. Dingham's in Winchester appears to be a viable business with many very loyal customers, and it seems a great shame that the decision has been made to close it rather than seek an alternative solution. That letter is from Liz Cooper, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
A different subject now. This letter from Dick Selwood is entitled Too Many Trees. Sir, in your coverage of the work on the beech tree on Oram's Arbour, online November 13 Chronicle, you quote a city spokesman as saying, "We are also going to continue looking at replacement tree planting across the whole arbour as and when appropriate." It is never going to be appropriate to put more trees on the arbour. In the last 40 years, the number of trees has doubled, cutting into the area available for informal play. Some years ago, the City Council agreed that they would not replace trees from the row along the western edge of the arbour alongside Clifton Road, and planted a second row of trees set well back where they wouldn't damage the road. This obviously got forgotten, as the gaps in the original row have now been filled in with saplings. The arbour is a wonderful historical site, part of an Iron Age hill fort and an area for civic recreation since the Victorian period. It is not a site for a young forest. And this from Derek Dick Selwood, Northview, Oram's Arbour.
And this is a rather concerning letter from Angela Goodridge, headed Death Failure? Sir, In the Hampshire Chronicle, dated November 4, I read with sadness the report on page 4 of the Winchester City Council tenant who was found dead in Stanmore at the age of 84, alone and having laid dead for some time. I read that her death is not being treated as suspicious and that the police are working with the coroner's officers and an inquest is to be opened. It is hard to ignore the rumours that surrounded this woman's death. If, as seems the case, she had no immediate family or friends, then her well-being depended solely on the vigilance of neighbours and, more importantly, the local authorities, those in positions of responsibility and specifically trained to protect vulnerable and elderly adults from harm. A failure to properly assess and act on safeguarding concerns may well have been contributing factors in her death. I hope the Hampshire Chronicle will cover the inquest and bring it to the public's attention. And this is from Angela Goodridge, Victoria Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter by Graham Trasler is entitled Ungrammatical. Sir, it's a general rule of language that we gradually use fewer words or shorter words to express ourselves, except apparently when it comes to the English language and its prepositions. I used to think that for free, i.e. adding the for before free, was tautologous. Free means free of charge and doesn't need for. But the for is now as ubiquitous as the apostrophe for plurals. In your report on the Watercress line last week, the Hampshire Chronicle produced a new example. Quote, arriving into Ropley Station, unquote. The arrival of something is about a completed process, not an occurring process. We arrive at, or in the case of boats, in the port of Dover. I have never heard of arriving into before, and I don't think it's grammatical. That opinionated letter is from Graham Trasler, Langton's Court, Alsford.
And on a different subject, this one is entitled Double Up from Robin Atkins. Sir, there were two letters written on page 24 of the Hampshire Chronicle last week from Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, Alsford City Councillor and Cabinet Member, and Dinah Ashcroft, both in respect of a previous letter from Councillor Lumby. Your readers should be aware that both Russell and Dinah have lived together for at least 25 years, and Russell's member interest declaration shows that they jointly own 45 West Street, in which they both live. Clearly, most readers, including Chronicle staff, were unaware of this close relationship. But leaving aside everything else, Dinah should have made this relationship clear, as otherwise readers would have assumed that there was no relationship at all between the two individuals. Dinah is entitled to her own views and can express them as she so desires, as long as she makes her relationship to Russell clear. Transparency is very important. This from Robin Atkins at Linley Gardens, Alsford.
And this is a letter from Oliver Gray, headed Time for Action. Sir, well done to Simon Juniper for telling the truth about smart motorways, Chronicle November 11. They are a terrible idea and quite obviously extremely dangerous. It is a simple fact that if you break down and there is a hard shoulder, you can get out of the way of other vehicles. If there is no hard shoulder, there is a period before the overhead warning signs come on when accidents are inevitable. The emergency lay-bys are far too far apart to be useful. We had proof of this just recently. We were on the so-called smart section of the M3, heading towards London, when the car in front of us broke down and slowed to a halt. Behind us was a huge truck, and to our right in the centre lane were several other large lorries. It was only because my wife is an expert and highly alert driver that she was able to get over into the centre between the lorries and avoid both us and the broken-down car being smashed into, causing certain injury and probable death. I haven't come across anybody who thinks that smart motorways are a good idea. Presumably they are viewed as a way to ease traffic congestion cheaply. But they aren't that cheap. Here in Winchester, they are just starting a huge so-called upgrade to smart motorway on the M3. It's costing more than £130 million. The first thing they have done is completely destroy many acres of meadowland in order to create a compound for the workers' equipment. It will take years to complete, causing major delays and disruption. Yet, as Simon Juniper says, the experts have long since concluded that the smart policy is mistaken and fraught with danger. Why is the government persisting with it? I don't understand. And that's from Oliver Gray, Finch's Lane, Twyford.
Sheena Smith also writes about smart motorways. Sir, thank you to Simon Lever for his letter, Chronicle, November the 11th, entitled Smart M3. We have been trying to make our collective voice heard on this issue for so long now. How is it that despite evidence clearly explaining why smart, in quotes, motorways are a proven danger to life, national highways are permitted to carry on regardless with further smart motorways development? This proven danger to life was the subject of a Panorama documentary in February 2020 entitled Britain's Killer Motorways. It was also the subject of my letter to this page on March the 5th, 2020. For how much longer are we going to be ignored by national highways, Highways Britain, and by the government of this country? So writes Sheena Smith, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And a number of the topics raised in these letters will be covered by other items later on in this recording. Next, we have the Chronicle comment, the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle, and that will be followed by letter from Winchester.
Thank you, John. This is entitled Independent Shops in the City Centre. These are times of great turbulence for high streets across the land, including Winchester's, for reasons that don't need to be repeated. Lots of people say the high street is dying, when in fact it is doing what it has always done, evolved. But it is sad and ironic that we report two stories this week that highlight that change, both the city council involved, both with the city council involved. Long-established kitchenware shop Dingham's says it can no longer afford the rents in the city council-owned property, so it is closing after 30 years in the square. And, as reported last week, the council is evicting two successful independent shops because they don't fit in to the arty vibe that civic chiefs wish to create. Setting aside whether a local authority can create such a, quotes, vibe, as they tend to grow naturally, it would be easy to criticise the council. At the square, they are to some extent constrained by their requirement to charge market rents. Whilst it would appear slightly mad that two successful businesses are being forced out of King's Walk, perhaps the council has a cunning plan that it is keeping close to its chest. Let's hope so.
And this is the letter from Westminster. What do we want Winchester to become over the next 10 to 20 years? It's a question I hear a lot, and it's not a new one. Like many readers, I remember attending the Vision for Winchester event at the Theatre Royal in March 2007. I am not new to Winchester. Erstwhile reports were drawn up afterwards, and there have been many since. And that's before we get to the Silver Hill saga, which spans more than 20 years. We now have another blueprint for what is affectionately called City Centre Regen. That will, rightly, be carefully considered, and I'm grateful to the WCC's senior leadership team for briefing me. I suspect the single developer, if that's what transpires, will be an issue for some, as it was the last time, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the lawyers do well once again. But we shall see. And I would encourage constituents to engage with Central Winchester because it will shape the future for years to come. For me, however, the question is, how does it all fit together to shape the Winchester we want and need? How will we attract investment to pay for the public services we demand, create good jobs for young people who've grown up here, foster an attractive retail offering, meet our net zero promises, and create communities at ease with themselves? City centre regeneration is, on its own, a massive project. Yet on top we have Station Approach, North Walls Rec, the availability of commercial business space, and, of course, the small matter of a possible $100 million investment on the River Park site by Southampton University. My first thought when I heard about this was for the impact on our own University of Winchester. And given the vision Given the vision is for it to have a creative industries focus, how it might affect existing city venues, such as the Theatre Royal. Neither were aware of the announcement until it was more or less in the public domain. Perhaps this will be good for Winchester's creative sector, but I'd like to see this and the future of King's Walk, where long-standing independent traders are being given their marching orders, to make way for new arts and creative hub, as part of a district-wide vision for arts and culture. I have conversations with many organisations, including their Vice-Chancellor, about the Southampton University project, and it's right to point out it will be years before firm plans are outlined. All the more reason to ask how this could change Winchester. We need local leaders to consider the impact a much larger university presence could have on existing communities and, for example, the availability of family houses for our children to one day live in. We do have to consider the impact of thousands of more students. Like Parliament, local councils are full of people who want to do what's right and care about the people and area they represent. The trick is to look up from time to time and make sure the pieces fit together. This city has a lot going on right now, but I feel passionately someone needs to decide how it all answers the vision for Winchester question and, crucially, whether residents agree with the answer. And that's from Steve Bryan, our MP for Winchester and Chalmersford.
There's just one announcement this week. A reminder that the major refurbishment of the Winchester Discovery Centre has begun this week. The centre is currently closed for 3 days to prepare for essential stock and gallery moves ahead of the refurbishment work. The library will be shut as normal on Sunday. From Monday, November the 29th, a pop-up library will be available offering a selection of children's and adults' books. Go online internet access, terminals and printing and photocopying facilities will also be available. Whilst the pop-up library is in operation, the cafe at Winchester Discovery Centre will be offering a takeaway service of drinks and snacks. Only cash payments will be taken. The public toilets operated by Winchester City Council will continue to be available to access from Tower Street. And in the later news items, there's an article about the Cathedral Christmas Market. Sunrise is around 7:40 in the morning these days, and sunset is just after 4 o'clock in the afternoons. We now move on to items of general news interest.
King's Walk to be demolished. Council chiefs revealed that King's Walk is to be demolished under plans to develop a, quote, vibrant cultural quarter, unquote. A Central Winchester Regeneration Open Forum on Monday was told that the major scheme to transform the area will include pulling down King's Walk, quote, in a few years' time, unquote. Ahead of any application for that part of the city, Winchester City Council has said that an interim plan is for a cultural and creative hub using the existing premises. Councillor Kelsey Lurney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "We are treating it as a meanwhile or interim use while full plans for the site are under development. So what we are looking to do is create the core of the cultural and creative hub in there. We have already got the Nutshell Theatre and a number of creative businesses and those aimed at younger people. Moving on, we want to brighten up the whole area, make it more vibrant and more attractive. We have got a number of artists and people working in the creative field who are already very interested in moving in there. Plans are being drawn up to transform the current loading bay into a performance space. It comes as two shops in King's Walk are facing eviction, Sunflowers Emporium and Suki Market." Councillor Lurney said, "The concept of a vibrant cultural quarter was central to the SPD, that's the supplementary planning document, and King's Walk is our first step to achieving that change and moving to a less traditional retail offer. So all our tenants have been on very short-term leases, and in the cases of those who are leaving, in one case they are going to the High Street. In the others, we have actually extended their leases so they can trade through their busiest time of the year. But we do need to make a success of this cultural and creative hub concept so that we can demonstrate that it can be integral to a final development solution after King's Walk is demolished, which we do now expect to happen in a few years' time. It's very difficult needing to ask tenants to leave, but this is part of the process of redeveloping the whole site. Plans for King's Walk are coupled with those for the disused Friar's Gate surgery. Full plans for a public open space on the site were due to be published on the council's website this week. Speaking about Friar's Gate, Verian Lyons, head of programme for Central Winchester Regeneration, said, "Because we sit in a conservation area, we couldn't demolish Friar's Gate without explaining and putting in a planning application for what we would be putting in its place. So we've been working really closely with colleagues across the council and also with the design teams at ARUP. And we started to think how the site would look if we brought down the King's Walk building. Really key was to start opening up the desire lines, the sight lines, the permeability to start to get people to understand that in the future it's not going to be a little island site, it will be fully connected. As previously reported, Friar's Gate will be demolished, but the council has now said that due to costs, plans have been developed using the existing footprint of the building. The proposal includes putting in planters, seating and working with the Winchester School of Art around exhibition space and play to the crowd regarding performances."
And another piece on the same subject, entitled Petition Launched to Save Shops. A petition to save the King's Walk's shops being threatened with eviction has been launched, with nearly 500 signatures already. Sunflowers Emporium and Suki Market are going to be evicted from their locations at King's Walk early in the new year. Sunflowers Emporium manager Alistair Day explained that the reason the City Council gave for this was, quotes, because of the vague notion of an arts and creative hub, unquote. The petition has been set up on change.org and has 425 signatures after being launched on November the 16th. On the petition, Mr. Day explains why they are frustrated with the council's decision. It says, "The actual details of this plan appear to be vague at best, but somehow include all the other businesses currently in King's Walk, except for ourselves and the Chinese supermarket, because we are not, quote, creative businesses, close quote, despite most of those being allowed to stay, not falling into this category either." Sorry.
And this article is headed MP Speaks to King's Walk Traders. Winchester's MP met tenants at King's Walk to talk about the future of the site and ongoing, unresolved antisocial behaviour problems. Steve Bryan met Neil Wyatt from the soon-to-be-opened Handmade Cyclist, along with representatives from Bespoke Biking, Polka Dot Piercing and Suki Market. As reported last week in the Chronicle, the City Council has told two businesses they must leave to make way for a new arts and creative hub. The Chinese supermarket and Sunflowers Emporium are among those who've been told they must move out. The MP also heard concerns about antisocial behaviour, which traders say negatively affect their businesses and make staff and customers feel unsafe. Mr. Bryan said, "It's hard to argue with the idea of a creative zone, but it's incredibly vague to effectively shut what are viable businesses who cannot afford to move to other locations in what is one of the most expensive high streets in the country. These are clients of the council, and I think a compromise will have to be reached. We should be supporting unique independent businesses, not closing them." Speaking about the public order issues, he said it could not be ignored. Heavy drinking around what used to be the city centre fountain and all the antisocial problems that flow from that has reached a tipping point. Businesses tell me it's seriously impacting their livelihoods and they don't feel safe. Winchester cannot carry on like this, which is creating the very opposite of a cultural hub and creating a terrible first impression of our city as it tries to recover.
Festive delights at Christmas market. Winchester's famous Christmas market has started with a wide variety of stalls and hundreds of people around the cathedral grounds. Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market is back after being cancelled last year because of the lockdown restrictions. The market runs until December the 22nd and is expected to attract thousands of tourists to Winchester. On the first morning of the event, lots of people were looking around the large number of products on offer. A wide range of stalls include food, drink, jewellery, crafts and artwork. The ice rink is not part of the market this year and has been replaced by a performance stage for local groups. An official opening ceremony took place in the Inner Close on Friday. Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, and Councillor Vivian Achwal, Mayor of Winchester, officially announced the opening of the market.
City sparkles at lights switch on. Winchester was lit up as the Christmas lights were switched on ahead of this season's festivities. Organised by Winchester Business Improvement District, the event on Thursday last week kicked off with presenters Craig Dane and Toby Anstis from Heart South, introducing live performances from the likes of Diva Academy, Duo Guitar, Integrate Dance, A Cappella, Hairstock Primary School Choir, Rock Choir, Spitfire Sisters, and, of course, Father Christmas. Local hero and special guest Lily Lomas, 9, received hundreds of nominations to turn on the lights. Hairstock Primary School head teacher Jackie Sankey said, "She is an amazing young lady who has battled cancer so bravely since November last year and has raised over £25,000. I am so proud of her courage and determination. She is inspirational at only 9. A giant snow globe in the square was also a popular attraction, with families queuing to get a picture taken inside it.
Action Group to Fight Uni Proposal. An action group is being resurrected nearly 10 years after seeing off a plan for the city's main leisure centre. Winchester residents are alarmed by the City Council's new proposals to lease the site of River Park Leisure Centre to Southampton University. They have relaunched Save the Wreck, which previously helped to stop the expansion of the leisure centre onto the cricket pitch in 2013-14. Now the council intends for the redundant leisure centre to be demolished and the land leased to the university for an expansion of its School of Art campus on Gordon Road. Save the Wreck says the principal issues are legal restrictions on the use of the land. The site is part of a parcel of land transferred in 1902 for use as a public park. There is a covenant protecting the purposes for which the land was to be used. The council has acknowledged that it holds the land on statutory trust for the citizens of Winchester, and the proposal is for an initial lockout 5-year lease followed by an 150-year lease to the University of Southampton, which would appear to breach both statutory law and the terms of the covenant. Save the Wreck says there will be a loss to the public, as the campus at the School of Art is not open to the public, and it is a private commercial concern with fee-paying students, and its purpose is education. A Hyde resident, who asked not to be named, added, "There has been no public consultation on the future use of the leisure centre site, even though there were opportunities when residents were consulted in 2018 and again in 2020 about plans for the recreation ground. The plans also include the 2 bowling clubs. We don't know if alternative uses, such as a Lido, a multi-use sports court area, a community performance space, or a heritage centre, have even been fully considered. We are unaware as to whether other organisations, private or public, have been permitted to tender for the site in a competitive process. We urge the council to halt this process now, so that a full and proper discussion of future uses for this valuable site can be carried out."
Schools give to shoebox appeal. Forgive me. Winchester's Christmas shoebox appeal has collected gifts from 6 local schools to be distributed around Europe. Winchester Rotary collected Christmas shoeboxes full of gifts for disadvantaged children in Albania, Moldova, Montenegro and Romania. The local schools which took part were St Bede's, Compton All Saints, St Faith's Church of England, Western and Week Primary Schools and Henry Beaufort. Winchester Rotary's contribution to the appeal was 6 cartons filled with over 200 jumpers, hats, mittens and blankets knitted by Alsford Lacemakers, 4 Marks WI and King Somborne Fate Committee and their friends, coordinated by Hilary Dunwoody. Winchester Rotary coordinator Colin Cook said, "Together with the boxes from the schools, boxes have also been donated by Winchester Rotarians, members of the Inner Wheel Club of Winchester and other friends of Rotary." And this is accompanied by a lovely photograph of 5 young people, children obviously, from St Bede Church of England Primary School, standing behind an enormous pile of beautifully wrapped Christmas shoe boxes. I've counted 25 so far, but there are more than that aren't actually in the photograph.
And this is something to be aware of regarding a recent distraction burglary. A Winchester home was burgled after the owner was convinced to help find a lost cat. Police are hunting a man and woman following a distraction burglary. The incident happened between 10:20 a.m. and 10:50 a.m. on Thursday, November the 5th, at an address in St John's North, the Broadway. The victim reported being at home when a woman knocked on the door, asking for help looking for her cat. Whilst the victim was helping, another person entered her property and stole jewellery. Officers have conducted inquiries and are now turning to the public for help in identifying those pictured as part of their inquiries.
M3 Smart Motorway Scheme is postponed. The planned smart motorway work near Winchester has been temporarily postponed following the raising of safety concerns by MPs this month. National Highways has postponed the work on the central reservation between junctions 9 at Winnell and 14 near Southampton of the M3 after preparatory work had started. The smart motorway work would follow. National Highways have written to contractor Balfour Beatty to say that it is being postponed. The statement from National Highways said it is actively considering the MP's Select Committee's findings and recommendations. It said, while this work is undertaken, National Highways have announced that they are temporarily postponing the planned start of work to upgrade the M3 central reservation barrier between junctions 9 and 14. National Highways Smart Motorways Programme Director David Bray said, "We have temporarily paused planned works on the M3 between junctions 9 and 14. This is while we and the Department for Transport consider the findings and recommendations of the recently published Transport Select Committee's inquiry into the safety and rolling out of smart motorways. We will provide an update in due course." The Chronicle recently reported that the £139 million scheme had almost completed its preparations, with the start of the work on the central reservation originally due to begin before the end of the year. As well as this, a contractor's compound is being constructed off Badger Farm Road and Otterbourne Road.
New service to look out for the mentally ill. A new mental health service has opened near Winchester, offering short-term supported housing to people in the early stages of a mental health crisis. The Lookout in Kennel Lane, Littleton, provides early intervention with short-term accommodation and intensive support for those who may otherwise develop a full crisis. The Lookout has 7 bedrooms, an activity area, shared kitchen facilities and quiet spaces which are now available 24/7. It is being run by Sanctuary Supported Living, SSL, in partnership with Southern Health NHS Trust, following a successful bid for funding by the Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight CCG. Service manager Laura DeFranco said, "Sanctuary staff include mental health support workers and a peer service support coordinator who work collaboratively with Southern Health clinicians to give people a safe place to recover and stabilise before returning to their own accommodation. The service is available for people in need of support for short stays up to a maximum of 28 days. There is potential for people to use the lookout initially to get to know the service and increase their confidence in using it as part of a crisis management plan in the future. The lookout is an important part of the work Southern Health is doing to transform its mental health acute and crisis care. The NHS Trust's aim is to provide more appropriate places for people in crisis, avoiding admission to an acute mental health unit or attendance at A&E. Southern Health local community mental health teams and crisis resolution and intensive home treatment teams are working closely with the new service." Andy Wilshire, Hampshire Lead Commissioner for Mental Health at the CCG, said, "Transforming and improving mental health services is a key priority. It is essential that we find new ways of supporting people to cope when their emotional and mental well-being is threatened. And this is a brilliant example of just that. We want to commission services where staff can support people at an early stage before they reach a crisis and then help them to recover."
Local residents praise Winchester GP surgeries. As GP surgeries overflow during this coronavirus pandemic and the super cold spread, residents of Winchester hailed their GP surgeries as excellent. Mr. Coombs, a patient at St. Paul's Surgery, said, "They're brilliant. They're wonderful. I can't fault the surgery at all. Sometimes when you call it at night, take a couple of minutes to be put through, but they see you straight away." Mrs. Paxton, also a patient at St. Paul's, said, "They are very good. Excellent. For general appointments, I got an appointment in less than a week for something that needed seeing that wasn't urgent. Otherwise, I would have gone to the hospital. It was excellent. From our family experience, they have been brilliant." Doctors recently hit out to the BBC for saying patients must compete for appointments once the phone lines open. Mr. Bannister, a patient at St. Paul's Surgery, said, "I had COVID and they were very good. They got me in within 45 minutes. I phoned the receptionist and they came back to me within 45 minutes saying, 'Come straight in.' I found them very good. I've seen them a lot in the past year, and I think they're excellent. I also did an online form, and an appointment became available straight away. In the past now, that would have taken ages, but now they're really on the money. However, it took the Hampshire Chronicle 19 attempts to be placed into a queue of four people, with the operator, quotes, on another line. From here, it took a further 15 minutes to speak to someone about appointments. Patients of St. Clement's also praised the surgery, with one patient, Mr. Kirkby, saying, "I've been getting appointments via the e-consult system, which seems to work well. They say they'll get back to you within 36 hours, and they've always done that. I think they can get through the phone system quicker by employing more staff, but given the circumstances, I think they're good." In response, Dr. Sudip Nandi, senior partner at St. Clement's, said, "The people working in the NHS, including general practice, have been experiencing some really challenging times, and I know that all three Winchester practices have been working hard to maintain a decent level of service. It is always appreciated when people take the time to give some positive feedback, and in return we can reassure you that we will continue to work hard to provide a good service and a high standard of clinical care." While on a call to St. Clement's Surgery, the Chronicle was put into a queue right away. However, it took 22 minutes to speak to reception. When asked his thoughts on the older generation, who are less likely to book appointments online, Hampshire County Councillor Alan Dowden said, "Residents generally are frustrated with a reduced number of GPs and the ease of gaining a personal appointment." He continued, "They are waiting a long time on telephone calls, waiting to get through to make an appointment. Often they will give up waiting. And then the receptionists are encouraging telephone appointments. I have not had feedback on how residents find these, but my wife's recent experience of this was very good. But I think older people would not necessarily find it easy or preferable."
Call for community facilities at depot sites. Local residents are keeping up the pressure on the City Council over the future of the Bar End depot. The City Council is proposing to sell the land off Bar End Road for redevelopment, although there is no public timetable for any sale. Janet Berry of the Highcliffe Forum for Community Action addressed the town forum, calling for facilities for the local community as well as a food store. "This is the final chance to provide facilities in the area that could transform the neighbourhood." A petition of 350 names had been gathered from people living in Highcliffe, Bar End, St Giles Hill and Wharf Hill. The last public consultation about the area was back in 2002 by John Thompson and Partners, said Mrs Berry, a former city councillor. The city council agreed last autumn to sell the site, in part to address the council's financial problems caused by the COVID pandemic. But it said there was no rush to sell and it would wait until the time was right. Last year, a group of local people were trying to set up a community trust to ensure that any proposals include assets such as a shop or community centre. Their concern is that once the site is sold, the council will lose control over what is developed there. In the past, potential uses of the depot have included housing, commercial, healthcare, shops, and a hotel.
Woman and three children rescued from flat by fire crews. Four people were rescued from a flat in Colden Common in the early hours of last Saturday morning. Excuse me. One woman and three children were rescued by fire crews from the flat in Badger's Bolt at around 3 a.m, which had become smoke-logged because of unattended cooking. A spokesperson from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service said, "Firefighters forced entry to a flat in Colden Common to rescue one woman and three children. Four people, including two toddlers and a baby, were evacuated and handed into the care of colleagues from South Central Ambulance Service. The incident involved unattended cooking." A spokesperson from South Central Ambulance Service said, "We sent to the scene a paramedic officer, our hazardous area response team, and two ambulance crews. They were assessing and treating four patients, three children and one adult, suffering from smoke inhalation. They were treated at the scene by our crews before being taken into hospital."
Civic chiefs call for action on wastewater. Concerns have been raised by politicians over what's being done about wastewater pouring into high streets and harbours. County councillors have raised fears after a recent incident in Winchester High Street. But Southern Water insist improvements are being made, with significant investment in solving the problem. Speaking at a full council meeting, Liberal Democrat member for Winchester Eastgate, Councillor Dominic Hiscock, said, "A recent rainstorm saw sewage flooding from Southern Water down Winchester High Street. I wonder how many other sewage flooding incidents the County Council has been reported to them in the last 12 months, and what the plan is to stop this from reoccurring. Executive Member for Climate Change and Sustainability, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "Responsibility for the public sewers and drains lies with the regional water and wastewater sewage companies. Incidents with sewage flooding should have been reported for further investigation and are monitored by the water company online. The County Council is informing drainage and management plans from the water companies and will set out how wastewater systems are being improved to make sure they are robust and reliable for the future." Southern Water has launched a task force to cut storm overflows, that is wastewater released during periods of heavy rainfall, by 80% by 2030. The task force will work with a £1.5 billion investment programme. Ian McCauley, Southern Water Chief Executive, said, "There is a growing call to take action to reduce the frequency and impact of storm overflows. That is a task of scale and complexity and needs multi-sector collaboration and a join-up of policy to make it happen, which of course appears difficult today. However, just 20 years ago, the quality of our coastal waters needed to improve drastically. Today, reflecting significant investment driven by focused policy, all 83 of our regional bathing waters meet strict European standards, and a total of 78 of those are rated excellent or good. Delivering a similar transformation in the reduction of storm releases is the next logical step, and we believe this can soon be achieved."
Plans for new park and ride. Major changes are coming for transport in Winchester with a new park and ride site north of Winchester, less parking in the city centre and more cycle lanes. The County Council is asking the public for its views on the Winchester movement strategy in December and January. The park and ride to the north of the city, off Andover Road, possibly at Sir John Moore Barracks, would be additional to the site which Carlisle Homes must provide as part of the King's Barton scheme. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Lead Member for Economic Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, approved the draft strategy action plan, including the 10 proposed priority schemes for the next 10 years. Councillor Humby said, "Since the Winchester Movement Strategy was first adopted in principle, we have been working with Winchester City Council and other partners to develop schemes which, if implemented, would help to reduce traffic in the city centre by expanding out-of-town parking capacity and providing new routes to encourage cycling and walking. The proposals emerging from the Movement Strategy seek to enable people to adopt more sustainable ways of travelling into and within Winchester. If agreed, the changes to the way roads and streets in Winchester are used would set a clear course towards a lower carbon, greener and healthier city. We will continue to work with our partners to ensure that any final plans to make a positive contribution to the quality of life of those who live, work and visit the city and support the city's economic recovery. I need to make clear that these proposed measures are not funded at this time, so sources of funding to deliver them will need to be identified and bids for external funding made. The County Council will also seek feedback on a local walking and cycling implementation plan, LCWIP, for the Winchester urban area, which will feed into movement strategy. Councillor Martin Todd, the Cabinet Member at Winchester City Council, responsible for the city's involvement in the movement strategy, said, "These proposals will help improve air quality in the city and make it a better place for people who live, work and visit there. I look forward to hearing people's views." This is the right moment in the process to listen. It's important that this is a how to make it better consultation, not a rubber stamping or a referendum on the proposals. Currently, all the city's park and ride is in the south of the city. The one now proposed off Andover Road would be the first in the north. Green campaigners say park and ride still encourages people to drive and call for more investment in public transport as well as walking and cycling. Alongside the new park and ride initiative, there are also proposals for parts of the one-way system to be made two-directional, including parts of Friars Gate, Upper Brook Street and St George's Street.
Award-winning garden coming to hospice. An award-winning RHS Chelsea Flower Show garden is being recreated in its new home at Winchester Hospice. Work has started on the construction of the Bible Society-sponsored Psalm 23 garden at the hospice on the Royal Hampshire County Hospital site. The garden won a gold medal at the recent RHS Chelsea Flower Show, also winning Best Sanctuary Garden and Best Construction for its class. Designed and created by award-winning designer Sarah Eberly, the garden brings the famous text of The Lord is My Shepherd to life. Dr. Lara Alloway, Winchester Hospice Trustee and Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We were lucky enough to be invited to the RHS Chelsea Flower Show in September to see the Psalm 23 garden in all its glory. And it is beautiful. I have no doubt our patients, families and staff will love it as well when it is recreated in its new home at Winchester Hospice. It's great to have a space where patients who wish to get outside and enjoy nature can go to relax, enjoy the soothing sound of water and can experience the wildlife and nature that encapsulates the landscape whilst they're being cared for within the hospice. I would like to say a huge thank you to the Bible Society for presenting us with this incredible gift for Winchester Hospice. It's a wonderful honour and will be appreciated by our patients, their families and our colleagues. I would also like to thank Sarah Eberly for creating such a picturesque addition for our hospice, and Mark Gregory, Managing Director for Landform Consultants Limited, and the team for all the hard work that they've dedicated to installing the garden for us." Sarah Eberly said, "I'm thrilled that the Psalm 23 garden will have a permanent home at Winchester Hospice and hope that it will provide patients, their families and the staff a place to reflect and pause. This garden meant a great deal to me, and so it's a particular joy to know that it will be appreciated and enjoyed by many more people in the future."
That was a great story to end our extracts nice. for this week. It'd be lovely to see it actually when it's installed there.
Yes.
So that's
I'm trying to remember which one. I always watch this. I love watching the Chelsea Flower Show, and I can't remember which one.
Right. Well, that ends our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas, and to the various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Walker.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And I've also forgot to mention earlier on that if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick.